Gabbert hands the ball off, and up the middle goes Maurice, and there he goes with a big hole. He's on the run. They will not catch him. Maurice is off to the races. 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jacksonville. 59 yards for Maurice Jones, drew his first rushing touchdown of the season.
And number 14 against the Colts.
David, football, football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program, available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Yes, there you heard. Maurice Jones-Drew claiming ownership. That's a down payment. And I think it was a lease that he had in the Indianapolis Stadium before he took full ownership of Heinz Field, set on the banks of the Three Rivers. Meantime, hi and hello, and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. You just heard Maurice there getting into the end zone. Pay dirt. He is right now back home again in Indiana. His one-time home. He likes to say that he owned it because the Colts didn't draft him when they had a chance to. Tony Dungy let him.
Sing the first line, Shaq. Sing the first line of Back Home Again in Indiana. Let me hear that sweet, melodious voice of yours.
I leave that to Gomer Pyle. I thought that was the first phrase. Isn't that the first thing? Isn't it?
It is. That's why I want you to sing it.
Back Home Again in Indiana.
See, there we go. Now we can do the pod.
It's a wonderful state. Of course, I matriculated there in southern Indiana. In Bloomington, Indiana, to be exact. It's weird. Money, you as a Chicago guy know that the upper half of the state is just this barren, flat, straight shot. You could fall asleep if on the drive on I-65 between Indianapolis and Chicago, and as long as the alignment in your car is okay, you'll be just
fine.
But then once you get past Indianapolis, then it turns into a glorious collection of hills and rolling streams and gorgeous lakes. Oh, it's beautiful, Maurice.
It becomes like Kentucky. You know, it kind of top half looks a little bit more like Illinois and Wisconsin, as they like to say. The bottom half a little more like the rolling hills of Kentucky.
If the Rams pay a visit to Indianapolis, I don't know what Eddie Spaghetti's doing there. I can see him. By the way, hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Did I say that? Oh, I said that part, but I didn't say who we're talking to.
Is that real?
I want to hear it.
It's not a fake.
First of all, let's say hello to them. It's Maurice Jones-Drew and it's Matt Money Smith over in it.
That's for Maurice.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
I'm gonna give money a round of applause.
By the way, shouldn't we as a society, I've taken down grapefruit for the laziness of its name. The orange deserves some scorn for that they just were like, at the fruit factory on that day, it was Friday afternoon, 4:58 p.m., and they're like, what should we call this fruit? Well, it's orange. Let's just go with that. Good, let's hit the bar. Same goes for Indianapolis. Right?
It's Indiana's metropolis.
Wait,
Indianapolis.
All right, so why don't we do that with everything?
Check.
Yeah. Pennsylvaniapolis, Pennsylvania. Terrible.
Check.
What?
There's some breaking news.
I want to hear it. I just was introducing you. I'm sorry.
Can
I got sidetracked.
Can we break this? Are you
I
ready?
Would like it. Here goes Maurice Jones-Drew. Is going to break some news.
He's
here. Drum
news.
Roll behind the glass there, MVP.
On a podcast that is consumed at your leisure.
And by the way, everyone, and on social media, everybody already knows
fault,
the news,
the
but we're breaking news that everybody who's listening right now
already had.
Already knew at least an hour ago. But go ahead, Maurice.
It's Eddie's fault. We are in the middle of talking,
Cowboys.
And he jams a phone in front of us and goes, hey, you guys better look at this. You better address it. It's a podcast.
Jason's
this big news is 6 hours old.
Has just retired from
being retired.
From being retired and is going back to the Cowboys for his 16th season.
Who is?
Jason Witten.
Are you kidding me? Jason
See,
Witten.
Look, now look at you. Now See? Look at all this nonsense, and I break news, and now look at your face.
No, that what you hear in my voice is excitement because, one, what I said before they announced who was going to be in that booth in 2018, a lot of people didn't exactly fall in love with Jason Witten, the analyst.
He was terrible.
What about his hair, though? So, like, how is it going to work? Is it going to look the same now, or is it –
I mean, that's a good question.
Because you got a helmet on now, right? So you don't really need the toupee anymore.
I can speak from Davey, from Davey and Goliath.
Is that what it is? It's a toupee? Because I thought speaking from experience with the dust I put in my hair, I was going to say he shouldn't wear that on Sundays.
I think he dusts. I think you're right, Dave. I think he's
dusting.
It's
a lot of dust, though.
Yeah.
Have you seen?
Oh, yeah. He's thin up top.
Yeah.
Thick dude. Thin up top.
I don't know. I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know what? It's a win for everybody.
Was he good at football? Last time we saw him playing football, was he still good at football? It didn't look like it.
He was catching the ball.
He's better at that than doing analysis on TV, I can tell you that.
Yeah, he was not.
I mean, it's.
Look at the fist bump. Look at LA's two rivals coming together on the DDFP. This is the real breaking news.
To be honest, Shaq, this ain't a real rival. I mean, we went to the Super Bowl. They, you know.
Oh, Maurice.
Did you guys really go to the Super Bowl? Because I watched that whole game, and I did not see a Rams team there.
Listen, I didn't see. As much as you didn't see,
I did not see
I know
anything.
I was there because I called it, and I have a thing that says that I have hanging up in my house under my bed. It says I was there, so it's all good.
All right, let's talk about that.
It has a Rams logo on it.
But actually, so now that we have this news, I'm going to go right back to where I was a year ago on this. You know who'd be the best at this? I mean, listen, I'd love to hear Maurice Jones-Drew's velvety voice on Monday Night Football.
It's going to be another tight end.
What it should be is, you know who'd be the best who's within the ESPN stable currently? Ryan Clark. That guy. That would be a good place to start. If you want to do a three-man
booth,
I'm open.
What's your connection with Ryan Clark, Shaq?
I know I'm a big. Everything goes back to my. Ryan Clark's a delightful fellow. Maurice Jones-Drew.
There's a million people you could put in there, and you put a Steeler. It's like just come on, work
he's
a little hard. You're talking about Orange and Indianapolis. That's as lazy as either of those.
What are you talking about?
Shaq.
He's the best. Of Ryan Clark. Who says more on ESPN than Ryan Clark does without jive? You know my policy. It's the no jive policy, money.
From what I heard,
he cuts through it.
He's good. I'm not saying he's not good.
I think Greg Olsen is the next candidate.
I would love to see that happen. He'd be dynamite.
Guy
funny fella,
with,
too.
With our broadcast, as a matter of fact, he'll be doing the analysis on the offensive line. I got to believe they make a run at Joe Thomas. He checks all the boxes. He's got great sense of humor, great analysis. He's super witty. You know, when you're cutting it up and you're having a battle of wits, that dude can get right back at, much like Maurice can. You know, I think that's something you got to have in that booth.
It's a different beast too. I'm not gonna lie. Calling games on radio is one thing, but doing TV is a completely different.
Yeah, TV's more entertainment. Yeah. Radio's more nuts and bolts. You know, you can't see anything. We're here to describe it and analyze it for you. TV, you're entertained.
Wait a minute. But TV's way easier, isn't it?
It's totally different.
It's a different timing, too. It's a different cadence, right? Radio is like, you know, money goes and I go right back. TV is more we're telling stories, a little longer winded. You're kind of describing people. You have to do a little bit more research on TV and just about different players. So
hey, I love Move the Sticks, Daniel Jeremiah, and I love I love JB Long as well. But you know they're not here right now, and the three of us are. I'm just gonna say, look, Maurice is the former player. Money is the deep voice.
Not former player.
No. But listen, you got the pipes to commandeer the microphone, and then you got just like remember Howard Cosell. That's what he was the straw that stirred the drink there on the old Monday Night Football
and
show.
You got Dave Dameshek.
Northeastern Jew has nothing to do with football.
You should be the sideline reporter.
Dave Dameshek. Sideline reporter, shame the devil, Maurice. I'm talking about is we go old school like Gifford and Dandy Donovan.
Three-man booth, huh?
Three-man booth and Cosell, and what they did, they had a little whiskey with them. That was the fourth man in the booth was a little booze. That's what I'm going to bring to the party.
Now you're speaking my language.
It's going to be inside my whatever Monday Night Football requires us to wear on the broadcast, inside there, a flask for all four.
I actually like that.
Okay, that's going to be a good time.
I have to say this, too. So I was in Arizona working with the AAF, the Alliance, and I was at the hotel restaurant eating. And someone came up to me, and he's a Raiders fan. And I forget his name now, but I have it in my phone, so I don't want to look into it. But anyways, he says, you know, I'm part of the Czech Republic and all these things. So I was like, oh, I'm going to FaceTime Czech. You know, I was like, why not? He ain't doing nothing.
Look at that. Former All-Pro running back Maurice Jones-Drew meets a random Raider fan in a Phoenix hotel restaurant, and all you got to do is put Dave Dameshek on FaceTime because this guy's a member of the Czech Republic. How did that turn out, Maurice?
Well, it rang about 18 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then Czech doesn't even text me back.
That's
until
not
like
true.
3 days later.
Oh, stop!
It was
lies.
Czech. It was
sounds
so
about right.
How long was it, Czech?
It
wasn't the same day.
10 minutes later.
Oh, 10 minutes.
20 minutes later, or something like that?
It was like
I don't know if you've
later.
Heard, Maurice, but when I'm not flapping my gums about the great game of pro football, I'm making babies. And there's a bill that comes due every day with those babies, which is feeding them and providing general care. And so I was off doing something with saw the phone ring. I forget what I was doing. I saw it ring, and I was at practice of some sort, whether it was a 11-year-old girl's basketball practice or a 9-year-old boy's hockey practice. I'm busy, Maurice.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying. I just tried to give you, Czech Republic was there. They were giving us some shout-outs. They want to talk about the Raiders, so we got to talk about the Raiders on the podcast at least once. Because he was like, why do you guys only talk about Pittsburgh? I was like, well.
Oh, shut up. Nobody said that.
Whose name is, he's got to update his Steeler Wheels blog. Maybe that's what he was doing.
Wow. He's Steeler Wheels. That is you. The reason that one is perfect is that money gets exactly how my brain works. If I were going to go with a pun, it would be from one that would be relevant in 1989.
Exactly
honoring
right.
the Rolling Stones 1989 World Tour, the Steel Wheels. Did you catch any leg of that tour, Maurice? The Stones? You big Stones guy?
No.
What's your favorite Stones song?
I don't even
know. Oh, come on. You can name one Rolling Stones song.
Come on, Maurice.
Not one?
They didn't grow up in my neighborhood.
That's always his thing.
About that.
You play football. They bang stones inside stadiums all the time.
I don't know. What is the song that Pittsburgh plays all the time? That's Renegade, though. That's not
Sticks.
That's Sticks. That's not the
Rolling
Stones.
I only know that one because I get amped up when they play that, and I go crazy. Because it's like, when you're at the house and your kids are playing music, I'm like, turn it up a little bit.
I'll dance.
Let's get the party going.
Yeah, I'll dance when I feel like it. That's the ultimate move.
What are some of their songs?
That's a great – come on, Maurice.
Where do you start? Gimme Shelter.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, you'd know.
Satisfaction, Maurice. Of
satisfaction,
course you know Satisfaction. I can't get
it. How
does it go? No.
Satisfaction.
Of course you know that song.
I've ever told you the time I went to a Motley Crue concert in Poison?
That seems like a terrible idea.
Oh. Well, my neighbor was like Vince Neil, so he invited me. At one point.
Would you like to hear a great Vince Neil story?
Well, here.
His favorite football team is the Pittsburgh Steelers side. Oh,
son of a.
So I'm in this concert, and it's me, my wife, and my trainer, and there's a bunch of people there. We were having a good time, and it's getting late. I love my sleep. And
yes,
so
you do.
I'm trying to leave.
That's why you look so young.
Thank you. I'm trying to leave, and no one wants to leave, so I just, lean my head over, and I go to sleep. And my wife has video of me snoring as they're letting off M80s and rockets in the building.
Pyro.
It's just all type of. And I'm just sitting there just like a baby. She was like, "You're the only person I know that can sleep through that."
Sleep through a Motley Crue pyrotechnic exhibition concert.
No problem.
Yeah. In a way, that's like street cred, That really, I like that you could fall asleep for that. You did land on something there, though, Maurice. That's what a Baltimore Raven or somebody like that should do the next time they play Renegade in Heinz Field. He should start dancing. Now he takes ownership of the song.
Well, that's what happened with him. That's Keenan Allen
in Seattle.
Keenan Allen did it in Pittsburgh. He said that was the motivation for their comeback. That they started playing Renegade, and he said that's a song that the Chargers played during practice, and everybody looked at each other and they were like, "Hey man, maybe this is a signal for something." And then that was the beginning. I'm not kidding. That was the beginning of their second half comeback. Was when they played Renegade.
They
Keenan
did
Allen
the same
said
thing
as much.
In Seattle. I think they were playing some song by Mo Bamba or Mo Mama or something in Seattle, and they just took the energy from the Seahawks.
Yep.
They used it. You got to be careful those songs you play, Sheck.
I love that. That's a good idea.
I went to school at Pepperdine, so a lot of the big-time celebrities live out in Malibu. So we would come across them when we would go out to the bars, and we'd go out drinking. So this place I used to frequent regularly called Pierview, because I knew the manager there, and we would get
a discount. Whoa, you used to hang out at the Pierview?
Used to hang out at the
Pierview. I wouldn't be surprised, Money, if you and I were there at the same time. I used to sing songs back to the people in Pittsburgh and Chicago about the greatness of the Pierview. It's a dive bar, you see,
dive
with a pool
bar.
Table, good place to watch the game.
But on the water.
But look out the window, and there's the Pacific Ocean. I love that place. They wrecked it.
So we're playing pool. We close it down one night. It's 2 in the morning. Vince Neil's with us, and he is obliterated. I mean, can barely stand. So he starts having words with some other guy and decides, okay, we need to fight. We're going outside. And, of course, the man who loves uncomfortable situations more than any other person on earth, me, I'm encouraging this behavior. I'm like, you're right, guys. We got to get you outside. We got to settle this. There's only one way this is going to be settled. Let's go outside. So we go outside. Vince Neil throws, without question, bar none, the slowest, weakest punch I have ever in my entire life witnessed in a legitimate altercation because he is so drunk. And as he throws it, he falls to the ground. And as he falls to the ground, his Rolex comes unclasped and spills off of his hand right at my feet. So being the dirt poor street thug that I am, right. I bend over and I scoop that watch up and I put it in my pocket. I'm like, this is sweet. What a development this is. And as I'm standing there, little do I know that his bodyguard is with him, and he comes over to me, and this man is large. And you know what? Good on him for not getting involved in the fight. Right. I think he kind of knew how it was going to go down. And he puts his arm around me, and he goes, you're going to give me that watch back right now, and you're going to be thankful I'm not going to beat the living ass out of you, okay? I was like, you got it, sir. I pulled the watch out of my pocket, put it in his hand, and I walked back into the pier view and had another drink.
That's a great story. The only thing that would be better is if you pulled your sleeve up and that Rolex were on your wrist right this
already.
Minute. That would be the best. No, right now.
Oh, and there it is.
There it sits on your wrist. Yeah. All right. Now, I want a couple things, Maurice, that we've covered over the months, and I don't get where you're coming from at this point. You're an enigma. I don't get it why you can't play ball. You and I break all this news. You break it on the DDFP. That's all I did was sit and listen to
you. We broke it.
And, you know, pretty much step for step, we knew what was going down because of what you were telling us with Levy and Bell. Now, of course, the misstep that people get sideways on is, well, Maurice was wrong. He said he was going to play. Yes, because of, as we've discussed, the it wasn't even a misread. It was unclear language in the contract.
Right.
The Steelers were confused. I think even the league had to investigate and reread it 17 times before it was really clear what Le'Veon Bell's issue was and whether or not he had to sign something or not. So here we are now. So let's start there. Latest with Le'Veon Bell. Latest we heard was on social media a week ago is that he was morbidly obese. True or false?
False.
He's not. He's in shape.
No.
He's ready to go.
Well, how about not morbidly obese? How about overweight?
I think people. I heard 260. And I'll give you where I don't know where that came from, but I'll give you like kind of the deal behind it. So. Remember, it was around week 11 we were trying to figure out if Le'Veon was going to play or not, and the whole transition franchise tag, all that came into play. And I appreciate you having my back, Sheck, on Twitter. I just try not to argue with people on Twitter anymore. I'm just trying to turn a new leaf, but I'm going to get back to my old self soon.
It is weird that you – it is weird, one thing, that to not acknowledge I have your back. It's another thing entirely that you then attack me as somebody who is a Le'Veon Bell hater. I've consistently
said, what are you talking
about? I've consistently said that Le'Veon Bell's one of my all-time favorite guys. I thought he was a dynamite player. I completely get. You know me. I'm the working class.
This is
pro-union guy. That's me.
That was off-air, Shaq. We'll talk about this later.
I don't know which.
So,
I don't know
which. But I'll say
I'm
this.
I'm pro-union. I hope he makes as much money as he could.
Shaq. You're blurring the lines.
So this is the thing. I think where that came from is Le'Veon you know, talking obviously with the agent, with my agent, and then talking with the trainer who I train with in Miami, they told him to take the month of November and December off because you don't want to overtrain, right? So he was doing little things, but he wasn't working out like working hard because you don't want to wear yourself down. This is your chance to be actually literally where no one else in the league is going to be completely healthy right now. That's what he is. He's completely healthy. And so he started back training, I want to say, the end of December or the beginning of January, similar like the combine guys do. And he's been going forward. I want to say he's in the between 220 and 230 from what I hear. And, you know, he'll be ready for a free agency and people will see him. Yeah, he'll be ripped up, ready to go.
Well, the thing that's interesting to me about it is how our assumptions, our collective assumptions about what needs to happen in pro football tend to change, even though people don't acknowledge them. They'll still stick with the empty rhetoric, even though the evidence has now swung the other way. What I'm saying specifically with this is, it used to be 10 years ago, it was just understood, hey, if you take a year off of football, you'll just never be the same again. You can't take a year away from the game. You'll lose something. Now, I think that the primary evidence being Adrian Peterson and, to a lesser degree, Jamaal Charles in that same season, they got hurt so early in the year that it was essentially like taking a year off. And then they both came back and didn't skip a beat, really. I think now the general wisdom is, oh, this is great for Le'Veon Bell. So is it? What's your best guess on that?
So talking with some teams last night, you know, there's definitely a market for him. I think the teams that are going to get him, they're happy.
What's the market he wants, though? Is there a $50 million market?
I think if you have two teams bidding,
that's all it takes.
That's all it
I'm
takes.
I'm just saying, do you think that market is out there for him?
I think that market is because he's young enough to do it, and he may be 27, but his legs are like 25, right? So you can kind of run him a little because he took that year off. But for me, he takes a year off, but he still has that ability to be that dual threat, right? And I think that's where people are failing to realize why he's you know, that number is thrown out there, is because he was the second leading receiver on Pittsburgh and the leading rusher. I mean, that you don't find guys like that anymore. The only other person like that was David Johnson, and remember, he hurt his wrist, right? And so he couldn't. And then they had their issues, but that was really it. Like there is no other comparison.
I guess Todd Gurley a little bit.
Todd Gurley. They don't throw the ball to him like that, though. I mean, the guys they should. But the guys you look at are, you know, Marshall Faulk when he was playing.
You know, Matt Forte.
Though, I mean, so you're talking about a guy that can come and help your team in two areas right away. And that's what teams are looking for, especially, you know, and I think the market are going to be either teams with young quarterbacks because he's a coverage dictator, right? So they're going to try to load the box up, stop the run, help Sam Darnold, whoever the young quarterback that they go and get, or that team he goes to that has it. Or you're like the Colts, where you're one dynamic player away from making that run again. And so there's a lot of teams like that. You put Philly in there. You know, and so I think there's a market for it, and there's teams with cap space that can do it. There's other teams, you know, there's been, and I check you're not going to like this, but there's been a lot of noise about Baltimore being an opportunity.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to like it. You and I were the first to discuss that. You floated that back in November, October.
Listen, don't tell nobody I told you, because it's you know, start letting my sources go. But
you said it out of spite. I tell people that, as a matter of fact, I invoke your story about that pretty regularly these days, that you got to remember, just like Tom Brady, no one believes in us, all that jive that I don't know how professional athletes. Uh-oh, Eddie Spaghetti with more breaking news. What is it?
Josh Rosen has removed every Cardinals post from his Instagram.
What?
Where there's smoke, there's fire, they say.
All right, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to
that.
I want to get to that.
Steeler wheels can update their Steeler news when we're not sitting at the freaking combine.
Listen,
how about that?
This is a – listen, 26 may
there
well –
there you go. Thank you, Emma.
26 may well be playing on the field behind
this
you
is,
guys
this
right
is
now.
Next week's, this is next week's Dave Damashek football
no,
program. Free agency starts
nothing.
What day? It's next week, right?
Here are the three
March
things.
13th.
The three things everybody's talking about there, you guys would know better than I –
hand
one
size,
where Josh
Kyler
Rose,
Murray.
I know.
I don't even care about that. That didn't mean anything.
Indulging this, talk about what is jive is the whole event right now. Like, as though this is going to change. John Ross is the personification of what can happen at the combine. Oh, he ran fast. Terrific. Let's.
Can I tell you?
I disagree with that. If you give me John Ross, I can give you Luke Kuechly. Everybody said, I don't care how many tackles he has. The linebacker position, you're not going to draft him in the first round. You're overvaluing
but
a position
90%
you can get in the second
money,
or third, and then you show up and you blow it out.
Money, 90% of what the scouts and personnel guys around the league believed last week, they are still going to believe next
week.
True 95%.
Or false.
So I'll tell you this.
Maybe
much.
There are
I
a couple
a
of guys who change.
So I got a chance. I work with Coach Marvin Lewis, right? And we got a chance to talk about that. And I was like, why did you take him? And his one word was like, I didn't want to have to go against him. Like, I didn't want that. The way he moves and the way he can run, I didn't want to have to go against him ever. And so that's how some people think. Like, some people are like, look, I'd rather have him on my team than have him on someone else's team, and we get torched. for
Yeah, I think just where, and I think a lot of that, that's what's so funny about it, right? So much of it can be territorial as well, because you don't watch a lot of Pac-12 football if you're not on the West Coast. But on the West Coast, anytime you watch the Pac-12 game with John Ross, dude was out for half the game.
Right.
And he was getting injured all the time. Now, the other half of the game, he's taking the top off of defense, and he's got three catches for 145 yards and two touchdowns. But it's like, man, can you really spend a first rounder on a small guy that's always banged up? And sure enough, it's proven.
Well,
as the
money,
rumor is, they're looking to move on from him.
As far as that goes, money, you know who is also 5'11", 190 pounds, who has on proven to be a little bit brittle, is, I fear, is Denzel Ward. And I think he splashed at the combine a year ago. And this led, I mean, the most foolish of all things is Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator at the Browns, who, as I said at the time, why would you, what Greg Williams wants for your roster is immaterial. He's not going to be there in a couple of years. As it turns out, he's not there now. And remember, he insisted they should have taken Bradley Chubb because Denzel Ward is going to be brittle. He's not built to sustained career in pro football.
Shaq, you have to remember why they drafted him, though. They drafted him for one reason only. It was to stop 84 in Pittsburgh. Because you can get big, tall corners, and he would just run around and run by them. Literally, they drafted, when I talked to people in that organization.
To win the division.
They drafted him so that they have an opportunity to win the division because he can go step for step with Antonio Brown. That's all they cared about. Everything else is whatever. They, you know, when you're in a division like that, us being in Jacksonville, we were drafting to get to Peyton Manning. That was our whole philosophy. Get pass rushers so you can get to Peyton Manning. Like, when you have a team that perennially wins your division, you're drafting to uproot them. That's all they were trying to do. And so, yes, he may be brittle, but let's remember when he played against Antonio Brown, he was with him step for step. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't
– When he was out there, he's Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a damn good-looking corner.
Well. You just got to find a way to keep him healthy.
Right, yeah. He's just very slightly built, and that's not going to change. But by the way, Maurice, you just touch on – it's a subtle point, and it's almost not worth making, and yet I'm going to make it here now, is that this is what I'm getting at when I say the Patriots, when people push back and say, oh, you can't blame the AFC East. It's a good division outside. This is what the Patriots don't have to do. They never in 15 years have thought, what's going to get us past the Dolphins? You know, right. Like, how are we going to match up? We have to draft to win our division. They never think in those terms, and that's an advantage against the rest of the AFC. Anyway, get back, Maurice, just quickly, on the Le'Veon Bell thing. Do you think it makes sense? Yes, a piece away. I completely get Frank Reich and Chris Ballard, but do you buy that based on the progress they've made in a year, that it then would make sense for them to make a hard right turn and go and get that what would appear to be maybe just that missing piece and get over the hump in 2019? It just doesn't sound like their philosophy.
Yeah, I don't think it is their philosophy, but I know a lot of teams, when you are that close and you feel like you're right there, they'll go for that extra reach, and they have the cap space, right?
So right.
I feel like, okay, you have Andrew Luck. T.Y. is getting a little older. You probably need to get another receiver, but if you can get a back, and I love Marlon Mack, but he hasn't been consistently that guy. So he's not going to demand eight in the box. He's not going to demand the respect from defensive coordinators. And that's important, because when you get to Kansas City, and I was actually speaking with Eric Bieniemy, their OC, and we were talking about how dynamic that offense was with Kareem Hunt. You had to pick your poison. Are you going to try to stop the run and load the box and let Patrick Mahomes throw it over your head to Tyreek Hill? Are you going to play two high safeties and conservative and let Kareem Hunt run down your throat? You decide. And so obviously when Kareem, they had to release him, they lost that running threat. And so people just ran double high, and obviously it ends up going that they struggle late in the year because of those type of things. And so it's always good to have – you want to have just a diverse offense, right? You want to have a threat in the backfield. You want to have threats at wide receiver. And I think if you look in this building, you have a quarterback that showed he can play. You have an offensive line that gave up the least amount of sacks. And if you can get Le'Veon Bell in there with Marlon Mack, all of a sudden you have a two-headed monster that's going to be tough to deal with. And you don't have to run Le'Veon all the time now. You don't have to give him 400 touches. You actually can extend his career and get your monies out of it.
I think the money's just the trick. You know, I mean,
because
where they're drafting, I don't know if Josh Jacobs was tough to figure out in the draft, but he could be available there.
Right.
And that's another dual threat, home run hitter, catches the ball well, plays pass protects well, runs between the tackles hard.
Yeah.
You want to pay that guy, you know, at pick whatever it is, 23 instead of $50 million guaranteed.
Right.
That's the big problem with that position. It's really hard to commit that much money there when, you know, you've got a quarterback who's making $120 million in Andrew Luck.
Well, they're lucky they've been drafted well, because that's what you do. When you have a quarterback and you can draft well, you do those things.
Right.
One of the things that cracks me up, though, when you talk about the Chiefs, right, they've drafted so well that they have real problems right now. And that's, I think that's where the Colts will be eventually, because you have an all-pro guard, all-pro middle linebacker. If they continue to play, keep playing well, you're going to have some issues. And so your window, and I think Jim Trotter said this a couple of days ago. We were on the phone. When your window, when you have that window, you have to run through it.
Right.
You
that's
have
what the
to
Rams
go,
did last
that's
year.
That's what the Rams did. You have to go get it. You can't sit back and be like, we're going to – no. This is our time to win. Let's spend the money. Let's figure it out. Let's go. And that's why I'm saying that's those type of teams are going to be the teams that go and pursue Le'Veon Bell, because it helps them push them through that window.
You buy that money? Because I think that's exactly right. Again, talk about
these. I think the Rams blueprint is going to have some carryover. I think you look at teams like the Chargers, the Chiefs, the Colts, the Ravens. Well, maybe not the Ravens, because it sounds like they're really committing to this Lamar Jackson thing, which is whatever. Crazy to me. I mean, that to me is just, if it works, kudos to them. But, man,
well, again,
the idea you're gonna throw three tight ends and extra O linemen out there.
I don't think they're going to do that from what I hear. What I'm hearing, they're going to kind of open it back up to what he was at Louisville a little bit. That's just what they had to do last year.
I mean, I guess, you know, just take that. Sorry, it was just an aside there. But, yeah, I think the Rams proved that that's a good approach. Go take your big swing. And, you know, future be damned. You don't have these opportunities often. You might as well get after it, because it is so darn hard to win a Super Bowl if you feel as though you are in that window. And I think there's probably five or six teams there.
The
and I think, well, I was just going to say, that's why the Saints traded up last year for Marcus Davenport.
Yeah.
Because they're like, if we can get that second pass rusher opposite Cam Jordan, we feel like our offense is there. Let's get after a quarterback. Our defense is there. And who knows? That call goes a different way. I probably would have picked them to get there anyway after the NFC Championship game, no question. I mean, to win that Super Bowl.
I think
they would have matched up very well.
It's like I said 10, 15 minutes ago. Yes, these assumptions from, you know, the late 20th century no longer hold water, no matter how much certain teams wish to hold on to those things. I think the Steelers, as a specific, need to let go of some of their proud past, and that's not the Steelers' way of doing business.
Right.
Well, you have to change
Packers
that.
As well.
The free agency era dictates that if you want to be relevant and really want to be competitive, you do have to tweak some of those things. And I think that it used to be, you don't win through free agency. You can't. What evidence is there that winning free agency means nothing come autumn? Yeah, it does now. Now it does. The Darrelle Revis was the key factor in the Patriots finally returning to the top of the mountain. The 2015 Broncos did the same with their big ticket free agents on the defensive side. And, you know, we've seen it with the Eagles. We see it with the Rams getting to the Super Bowl. So I think that there is now, as long as teams like the Colts and Eagles are open to it, I think that Le'Veon Bell could walk in and really deliver a trip to the Super Bowl for one
and
of them. Because I think
Tampa,
the Colts are the perfect fit for them.
Tampa's another team that you're trying to help Jameis Winston, right?
Just defensively, they are such a mess.
Yeah, I mean, those things will pan itself out. I was going to say this. The one thing that I do respect about the Patriots, I mean, I also respect a lot of what they do winning-wise, but Bill Belichick, it's not the Belichick way. We're not going to win my way. He just wants to win, period. So,
so he takes whatever he has.
Whatever you give
me. That's why it's called
amoeba.
Yeah. Whatever he's got is what he adjusts.
So many teams, you hear so many GMs and coaches say, we're going to win our way. Like, no, just how about you just win? You know, that was the old Al Davis saying, just win, baby. Find a way to get it done. And that's the unique part about it is, like you said, the Pittsburgh way or the Green Bay way or this coach's way. How about you just try to win the game?
More than free agency, too. Sorry, Sheck, to interrupt. But I think it's more of the way the Rams attacked trading. Like, okay, so we've got this first-round pick. We could use it on a wide receiver, or we could use it on a wide receiver and Brandon Cooks, who's much further along and can help us immediately. We can use this second-round pick on a corner, or we can use it on Marcus Peters. Now, the interesting thing will be how many of those guys are gone. Do the Rams take a step back? And if they do, how big of a step? And that will certainly adjust how teams approach, because they could say, all right, you took one big swing. Well, now what are you going to do for the next four? So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out for them.
I feel like the Rams are they're still in that window because you have the fifth-year option. And now, because you have your draft, you have to draft now and you have to draft well now because Talib is getting older,
right.
And Ndamukong Suh probably won't be back. You got some LaMarcus Joyner probably won't be back. Maybe a linebacker. Like, so you have to fill those spots. But still, you put yourself in position to be successful, right? I mean, let's be honest. The NFC West, I mean, is positive everybody wants to be. They still – there's not a team there that's still – except for Seattle, but there's not a team that scares you right now.
Right.
And so Seattle can run the ball 75,000 times. But in the playoffs, you got to find a way to win. And so they just – you know, I just think the Rams have put themselves in position maybe for – 2 years or 3 years, you know, with last year or 2 years ago being a thing, this may be the end of it. This next year may be the end of it, yeah, but it's a run that you want to try to make happen.
And I think the interesting thing with the Rams, too, is, and this is, you know, to make a cross-sport parallel, something that's going on with the Dodgers is, you know, okay, well, you're so dominant that now maybe you don't spend as much. Because, look, Seattle, I know Earl Thomas wasn't out there the whole season, but they're going to lose Earl. They're going to lose K.J. Wright. They're going to lose Frank Clark. That defense is not – Clark was – he was, to borrow a phrase you used earlier, the straw that stirred the drink on that defense. He is the most underrated pass rusher that is never mentioned in the NFL. And once he's gone, they're going to have to draft to replace that. So if you're the Rams, you're probably like, okay – we probably shouldn't be expending draft capital to get veteran players that we got to pay a lot of money on because we're going to win this division anyway.
Right.
But then you fall into that trap of, okay, you win the division. Well, you were in the Super Bowl last year. So the only step you can take is to win the Super Bowl. Otherwise, it is not a successful season. It's a step back. So I'm anxious to see what approach, you know, they
Me
take because there's a lot of different players that
you
know, they got to figure out.
The Rams really are a fascinating case study going forward for a number of reasons. Obviously, everybody, half the league went out and tried to hire a Sean McVay doppelganger. But what about Maurice? Because we haven't talked to you since the Super Bowl. Now, I've said repeatedly off the air to you that I feel like, I mean, it just doesn't add up. The boy genius, you say what you want to say to me, and I'll believe you on this because this is being recorded. Now, Todd Gurley is an MVP candidate at the start of November. Not again, I'm telling – don't act
until
up,
we
don't
agree with you
up.
You're gonna bring this up on every single until we agree
Maurice is friends with Todd Gurley, CJ Anderson, and is the
hurt.
Analyst
exactly.
for the Rams.
Everybody has said that to Sheck for Sheck, 3 weeks now.
Listen, he was not hurt. I'm gonna tell you what happened. I think
okay,
McVay,
that's all I want to know
said
is
it
what
today.
Happened
he said
then.
It today. He
I
said
hear
that.
What happened.
And he does a great job of pointing out his faults, but they didn't try to – the game plan, I don't know if the game plan wasn't to get him going or it was or whatever, but for some reason they went completely opposite of that. And they tried to throw the ball down the field, and it didn't work out. And so it was one of those things that, you know, Todd was actually running well. He started the second half off right. He had some 4 or 5 yard rushes early on. That big run he had got called
yard
back.
Yeah,
got called back. Right,
well, even
so,
the one that didn't get called back, that first one,
yeah,
he explodes through the hole. He shifts. You could see. I mean, like
he was
hurt,
healthy.
You can't do
that. He was healthy. I just think a lot of it was, and this is what people fail to realize. Part of him sitting out those two games, one was that yes, his knee was ailing him a little bit, but two, I think he had almost 350 touches in 15 weeks. They were like, whoa. We just gave this dude all this money, and we're about to give him 450 touches in a season. Like, that's, you can't do that. You have to, you know, space it out so that you can keep the explosive going.
I hear you.
So
listen,
so
the guy
this,
who's
this other thing.
There's a guy whose name is hanging behind you there, Reggie Wayne. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I don't think Reggie Wayne is either. He just decided that it's weird that a proper injury that should have shown up on the injury report. I don't know about that, but Reggie Wayne said just because Zeke Elliott can handle that workload doesn't mean everybody can, and he had wear and tear, and he had run out of gas at that point.
And remember,
that's
too,
all.
Todd, this other thing that people
not crazy.
I realize Todd tore his ACL in college before he came out. So that it's not as if, you know, like that was the knee that was bothering him too.
And a lot of times that's mental.
Yeah.
Like, this knee hurts. I tore my ACL on this knee and you're not 100% sure about doing what. And plus, you know, we discussed this too after the Super Bowl. If you watched that game, and clearly you did, you were there analyzing it. That, you know,
thank you for acknowledging that too, because I wasn't the Super Bowl.
Darn right you were.
Yeah.
The team wasn't, but you were.
Oh, yeah, I showed up.
The Bill Belichick didn't take away a player. He took away outside zone.
Yeah.
He took away that play. You will not run the play that is your bread and butter and everything else is built off of, so figure it out. And I think once they did that, McVay, I don't know if he wasn't able to adjust to that adjustment, but like you said, they started doing different things that they had not done all year, and that play is Todd Gurley.
Yeah, and so what it comes down to at the end of the day is I felt like, and I think McVay really, I mean, Bill Belichick had 2 weeks to figure out what they were going to do. And as a coach, and you know what, I have to give Reggie Bush, as much as I don't like to talk about Trojans, I have to give Reggie Bush a shout-out here, because he was like, look, if you're ever going to play the Patriots, you have to throw something at them that they haven't seen before. You have to find a way to come out in a different personnel or different splits or whatever it might have been, because they're going to practice. They're going to go all the way back to when he was the Redskins coach to look at everything and he does in certain situations, because you're trying to figure out the DNA of this coach. And he just didn't do it. And Bill took away his DNA, what he likes to do in certain situations. And that's what happened. I mean, there was a there was a play where they were backed up, and they ran what we call one hole, where the safety drops in and is kind of the robber, one robber. And it's man-to-man across the board. And Jared doesn't see the safety at all. And he throws the ball. And if the guy doesn't hit the ball and bat it down, it's going to be a pick six the other way, because he doesn't see him. It's just they knew where they were trying to go with the ball and who they were trying to go with the ball in every situation. And they were double-teaming guys. I mean, they did a really good job. And I want to say that's Flores, right, who's in Miami, had a great game plan together. We always talk about Bill doing it, but he was the one calling the defense in and talking to guys and communicating. He did a really good job. And so I always tell people, like, look, someone has to win, someone has to lose. It was an ugly game, and we don't ever talk about how Wade Phillips' defense
played great.
Played phenomenal. There's no way.
Absolutely right.
And I'm not, and I know we don't like that. Look, if you were ever to tell me the Patriots were going to score 13 points,
yeah,
I would have gave you everything I had to say the Rams were going to win.
Oh, and probably win by two touchdowns.
Yeah. They're going to blow them out.
Yeah.
And so it just ended up not being a great offensive day for them.
Well, okay. I'm not trying to put you on the spot with that, Maurice, because obviously you work with the Rams.
Yeah,
the one thing I'll say is, if you're right about that, and I believe that you obviously are tied in with on a personal level beyond just being professionally linked to the team, you know C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley, but then what it leaves as the conclusion is Sean McVay, I don't want to say choked, but he didn't do a good job.
Wasn't a good game for him.
Sticking play action through the second half when clearly they're not biting, then what are you doing with that?
If that's your offense, if you're a play action offense, that's what you're going to do, right? And that's what we talked about. The Patriots aren't one single thing, right? They do everything. And what they end up finding late in that game was that we're going to find a way to get your linebacker matchup on Julian Edelman. We're going to find a way to get your linebacker matchup on Gronkowski, and we're going to take advantage. And that last drive, they literally did the same play two or three plays in a row. And that's how they threw it to Edelman.
The whole game.
Right? They threw it to Edelman a bunch, and then they threw it deep. And that was that one drive that they ended up hurting the Rams. But that's the difference, though, that I talk about, like when you're trying to win a certain way. When you're like, I'm going to win my way.
Yeah, right.
We're a play-action team. We're going to do play-action. You can't, like – sometimes you just got to try to find a way.
I love that you say that, Maurice. But by the way, I think that's why the Patriots, as a dynasty, you know, they're always going to be haters of any dynasty. People always want to see the evil empire get knocked off, no matter who that dynasty is. But also, I think why the Patriots don't feel that, why they don't feel as beloved as other sports dynasties do, is because of what you're getting at. They don't care that they're chameleons. Yeah, that's how we win. But they don't have a vibe to them, per se.
The greatest show on turf.
Right.
It doesn't, not, you know.
For what that's worth, it doesn't mean anything to the Patriots. They're happy with their six rings.
Yeah.
And I think it all goes back to Tom Brady. I think all the QBs, every single one, has a big ego. And the difference is Brady has a big ego, but I think he truly abides by whatever it takes to win. I think that the ego leads every other QB to the conclusion, I just want to win. And by the way for us to win is for me to have the ball in my hand slinging. And Tom Brady is actually the one guy who has the big ego. He's like, I don't care if it's Michelle is the MVP of this game. It doesn't matter to me as long as I get the ring.
To me, it comes down to this, too. Let's remember, Tom Brady he's like the 15th highest paid quarterback in football, too. Like, you're right. His ego is gone. I got an ego, so I got to be the highest paid. I feel like I'm the greatest every time I step on the field, especially in this building. So, you know, I'm sorry. and I
all
respect
right.
Tom for that.
Let's
right.
talk about then the – say what you – I Combine. Mean, listen, people are talking about what's going to be with the big free agent? What's where 84 from the Steelers are going to get traded? And then the 10th overall pick last year, who I fell very much in love with that night for his moxie. He was PO'd that he went so low. And now it sounds like, at least, that he's going to get traded again. Everybody there where you guys are is announcing, well, I've been doing this long enough now, it's pretty clear that Kyler Murray's going one. And that would then lead you to believe that he's going to be the starting quarterback for the Cardinals in 2019. Money, how say you?
Won't be surprised, you know, because Cliff Kingsbury was on record before he was the head coach of the Cardinals declaring that Kyler Murray was a game changer and would be a game changer in the NFL, and he would take him number one overall. And that's not him just blowing, you know, up the competition that he's got to face at Oklahoma and trying to show them praise and not upset him. But I do think he believes that. He wholeheartedly believes that that's the style of football that can succeed and does succeed in the NFL. And if that's what you believe, then go get it. Now, I guess, you know, if you want to play conspiracy theory, you talk to Josh and like, hey, look, we had to give up picks to jump up and get you last year. Right. So we got to try and recoup those picks. So let's play this game, because unless it's a quarter, people aren't trading up to get Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams or Josh Allen to number one, but they're trading up to get Kyler Murray. And if unless we sell that we're going to take him at one, then they're not going to do business with us. They're going to do it with the Jets at three, or, you know, the Raiders at four, whomever it may be. So it's either, you know, Cliff is convinced Steve Keim and the Bidwells that you know, this is our future, and you're going to inject serious life and excitement into the desert with this guy as your quarterback, and we'll be able to recoup a little bit, you know, maybe 50, 75 cents on the dollar for Josh. Or this is the best way for us to execute a draft plan and get the most draft assets for the number one overall pick. So, Josh, get in on this with us. We're trying to get you as much help as possible.
Todd, take a guess. Take a guess there, Monty. What's where,
I think they're
going to
take Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I think they're
going to take him.
This is the other thing. Let's remember, like, this is the first time I feel like in NFL history a team hires a coach, then fires him after year one, and then hires another guy. And each year they're going to draft a quarterback, right? So it's just one of those things where, you know, Rosen goes in a situation where it wasn't conducive to win. Offensive line was beat up. Coach wasn't, you know, they weren't. I mean, the offensive coordinators, Byron Leftwich came in, tried to do his best with it, but you were running someone else's offense. For me, it's just, hey, this is the part of the business. And this is why the NFL is one of those games that the business side always comes into play. And, you know, the only time it's football that, like, we all grew up playing is when you're on the field. Everything else is strictly business. And so I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, think about what Maurice said earlier, Dave, about the NFC West.
Yeah.
There's a giant gap. So if you feel like you're that far behind the Rams, why not, right? Why not just take the guy that everyone's going to be excited about, that your head coach believes is going to change the NFL, and move.
Exactly.
You know,
side
because
note,
of the contracts, you can do that now.
Yeah. Side note, it's always a guessing game who's going to rise up in any given season, but pretty consistently you can identify a team that people get a little over their skis about a year too early. That was the San Francisco 49ers. I think unless you think Kyle Shanahan has misread Jimmy Garoppolo's potential greatness, then I think 2019, I think that team's going to rise up.
You want some knowledge on them?
What do you
can
got?
I give
I would
you
like
some
that.
Let's we love
so,
knowledge here.
So here we go. One,
Earl
84
Thomas.
Is obviously 84 is a potential going there. No, Earl's going to Dallas. From what I hear, it's Dallas.
Sounds like it, but
it sounds like Dallas unless something just falls through, right? 84 is a potential guy there. I think they really, because they're trying to get what their goal is. They're trying to get a receiver. They're trying to get a pass rusher. They'll do anything for a pass rusher right now.
They got one. They got, you know.
But they try to need an edge. They want a guy on the outside.
Right. They need an edge.
Yeah, so they're looking at possibly, I don't know if the Cowboys re-tag Lawrence, if they get a deal done, or if the Chiefs tag D Ford, or they get a deal done.
Well, and Houston's now on the market.
Houston's out there. You can get T. Suggs, who wouldn't be an every down guy, obviously. But
right. Well, no, I think T. Suggs is going back to Baltimore.
Do
from
you?
What I'm hearing. Yeah, I think they're going to let him kind of get the Ray Lewis walk off on your own type of thing.
Well, and they can just draft one. I mean, they got a top five pick, so you're going to either get. You know, and I don't think they would take Williams just because
they're gonna stack
that interior.
Yeah.
They'll go Josh Allen.
Yeah, they'll
probably.
Go Josh Allen. But
or Nick Bosa. If Kyler Murray goes number one, now you've got Nick Bosa sitting there, and you're good.
Yeah.
There you go.
So,
you're done.
So they're definitely doing that. But then also, don't be surprised if they try to make a run at Lev. Because, again, Kyle's – and this is me being with Kyle as an 18-year-old and understanding his philosophy, right? I lived with him in college my first summer because he was teaching me the West Coast offense. And his philosophy is this. I would rather have a top five a defense. And Jim Trotter, we talked about this last night as well. I'd rather have a top five defense, and then I let me do what I have to do with my offense. But if I can't get a top five defense, then I'm going to make sure we're going to win every shootout possible. We're going to get as much power on offense as possible. And you have the capital. That's the thing. They have the capital, and right. They're in that part where they're
salary cap space, yeah. Draft capital. They've got it all.
And remember this. They're in year, what, three, right? This is year three. So now it's time to start winning. It's not about, you know, it's not right. About we can't keep building. We're in this rebuild mode.
That's
it's
right.
Time that the rebuild's over. It's time to start winning. So like you said, this is the season you may see the you know, the Twins of Pittsburgh go to San Fran.
I could also see, based on the relationships that obviously break through very often in pro football, I could see Tevin Coleman them making a play for a small. But yeah, if they get a splash defensive player, a guy who can get to the QB, I think they're going to be a really good team in 2019. Josh Rosen, though, another guy, Maurice, who you deal with and supported in advance of the draft, you called him the best quarterback, not just in the draft. In that draft,
still think he is.
Okay, where's a good fit for him? Do you like him with Cliff Kingsbury if it winds up that way?
I mean,
is it best for him?
If he stays there, then that's awesome. Other places you probably can trade him to, Redskins. You probably can get him down to Miami.
Huh, that's a good one.
I don't think those – I'm not saying these are the best
fits.
Well,
because there's not a lot out there. That's the thing. Yeah, like when you start going through and you look at where the young quarterbacks are or where the established veterans are, you run into Jacksonville. The Giants as, you know, taking it over from Eli next year. The Redskins, based on Alex Smith's injury and how severe that is, it looks like it's very severe.
Yeah.
And Miami. And that's really it. I mean, throw out a couple others.
For a while now. We have reached it, money. QB saturation.
Right.
We're just about there. We're three teams away.
We're covered on quarterbacks.
Five years ago, there were about 10 good quarterbacks in the NFL.
And there's still like six. But we use the word potential and
viable
QB too much.
Yeah. I'm talking about supplanting current starter.
Right, right. Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Supplanting current starter.
But a lot of times, though, we don't like. Let's not forget Tennessee is a place that's possibly looking for a
when you've
QB.
Got to write that check. Yeah. That's when you nut cutting time.
Right.
What are you going to do?
And so there's teams. I just think like when you have enough young guys, eventually. And granted, like Deshaun Watson, I think will get paid. Obviously, we saw Andrew Luck. You got to think about the NFC North. You know, Aaron Rodgers is getting older. You may want to start looking for a guy to kind
Phillip
of
Rivers.
Phillip Rivers. You're starting to get. It's going to change the Saints. The Saints are another team that you may be able to trade him to because he's on that rookie deal. And now all of a sudden I don't have to worry. Like Drew Brees will let you play this year. Then next year we have our guy.
You still got 4 years,
right?
With that fifth year option with Josh.
So,
boy, that sounds like some fit. I have not considered the Saints, but that's a great one.
I just think there's a ton of teams, and still in every situation. Let's look at the East. Okay, Carson Wentz, Dak. Then you have both Giants.
If you just go through the East, you have Josh Allen, Tom Brady. Heck, why not the Patriots?
Yeah,
it's
the Patriots.
4 years left. You know, right. I mean, that's the thing. It's 4 years left on that contract because of the fifth year option because he's a first rounder. You could just plug him right in there.
And so I think there's still teams that, you know, we just named off like six or seven of them that can do it. And then there's other teams that, you know, they just may not, they may be like, you know what, Matthew Stafford, this ain't working out.
Yeah,
right.
But I mean, he's still – like, to me, it's you can then bring in the Tampas if they don't believe in Jameis and don't want to pay him. Cincinnati, you can just – because you can now cut, you know, Andy Dalton and move on. And that's where you start to figure out. But I don't, what do they want? I mean, they traded up to get him.
A two or a three. I mean, again, you know, because you're saying, look, we just want to get something for him.
Right.
Because we're going to get – our guy in number one, you just want to make sure that it's a clean get it out. You don't want to be stuck.
I would think Zach Taylor, by the way, wouldn't Zach Taylor love if you could do that? Hey, we're going to send Andy over to D.C. He'll take over there with his old pal Jay Gruden. And Arizona, you send our way, and then we're going to send a pick down to Arizona for you. That works out. Nice three-way trade. We worked it out.
There you go.
Maurice, one more thing for you is Josh Rosen. Do you like – talk about old standards that all these 32 teams abided by for too long. Is the idea that has been blown out of the water, as far as I'm concerned, Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith and KC notwithstanding, is this jive that the Giants – do you think that Eli Manning – is going to get you to the Super Bowl in 2019. If you do, then draft somebody to support him and build around him offensive line through free agency in the draft. Or if you don't, then get rid of Eli Manning and draft his replacement. This idea of 1 + 1, it equals 0 in the NFL at quarterback. I don't bring in a young kid and Eli, right?
Well, I think that's what they're going to do, because you're going to let Eli – you're going to let the young kid learn under Eli. So many times where, you know, the Patrick Mahomes thing brings back that waiting time. Because before it was like, just get him out there, let him go.
That's dumb.
And Andy Reid sat him
down. But that's
dumb.
Think of
who's the greatest quarterback? Who's the best quarterback in our league right now?
I don't know.
Pat Mahomes, the MVP.
Pat Mahomes.
Aaron Rodgers.
He
sat and waited.
Yeah, Tom Brady sat and waited. I mean, those guys sat and waited, and they've been consistent. Guess what? Drew Brees.
Yeah, sat.
Those guys that sat, they get a chance to learn, and then the game picks up. I guarantee if you started Patrick Mahomes as a rookie in Kansas City, I don't know how good they would have been, but it would have been year two wouldn't have been as nice as this year.
I love that. You know what, Maurice? I think that's an interesting name you bring up, because that's the one everybody points to. Not one, and with all due respect to Rodgers and those examples that you threw out there, those are 12 years ago, and it feels like a different era now. So the only example currently, really, I mean, you know, in the last decade, is Patrick Mahomes.
Even Baker Mayfield sat for a couple games and they put him in there.
Maybe they would have made the playoffs. And by the way, Patrick Mahomes, it is. You know I like what-ifing stuff. How do we know what Patrick Mahomes would have done in 2017? They wouldn't have been a playoff team. Alex Smith made him a playoff team, but Patrick Mahomes wouldn't have been that much better. Maybe the year under his belt as a rookie, some fits and starts.
Jared Goff sat, right? Jared Goff sit?
You know what? Mahomes is an interesting one, just because, you know, if you talk to people when he was coming out, like, they were dumbfounded of how they were going to work with this kid, because he didn't have, you know, limited footwork. He had none. And I think that's one of the interesting things about Cliff Kingsbury, right? It's like he never really developed Mahomes. Mm-hmm. He never became like your standard, hey, he's got a nice slot, he's got a great release, so look at how much better his footwork is. No, he was just running around, throw it as hard as you can. So, and even Patrick Mahomes has said, Alex Smith really helped me learn how to be a quarterback. So I think it's – I would be more comfortable saying that he probably would have struggled had he started as a rookie, when he's talking about how much he learned and how generous Alex Smith was in teaching him how to play that position, which he really – and again, this, I think, is to some degree an indictment on Kingsbury. He really didn't know, you know, kind of what he was doing.
That's a great point.
I mean, some of the things people were saying, especially when I talked to, like, Eric Bieniemy, I'm like, why were you guys so excited to play him in year two? He was like, because – It was like little things that he didn't do at Texas Tech that Andy Reid and Alex Smith were able to mold him, and obviously their quarterback coach and like everyone nagging, all those guys that were able to put their hands on him and try to mold him in different directions. As a rookie, as a rookie starter, you don't get that time to mold him. You don't get that time because he's out there playing. So he has to go off of just pure instincts. I don't know if he's that good, right? And so we all underestimated the fact that he was able to kind of do what he did this year because of what he looked like at Tech. I thought he was going to throw crazy picks. I was like, bro, he's going to throw all the picks in the world because he's going to throw it, look at you, and throw it this way, and he's going to flip it, and all these, throw it left-handed. But he was, they molded him to be a pocket passer with the ability to do those things.
Okay, three. Let's go real quick. You guys have been way too generous already with your time. Let me blow through these real fast. Is there a Patrick Mahomes style guy out there? Obviously, the copycat league will rise up. Everybody's going to
Kyler Murray
to try and have that. Kyler Murray is that kind of splash guy.
I think that's the closest.
He does it. He's just not as big.
He's a hell of a lot faster too. I mean, that's the thing. So yeah, that's your guy. I mean, I think everybody's going to probably tell you the same four names. Right?
Two.
I mean, it'll be Jones, Haskins, Murray. And Locke are your four.
And by the way, the Broncos are going to do that too. Everybody seems to agree with that one. As soon as they went and got Joe Flacco, I said, watch, they're going to go get Locke because John Elway abides by that 20th century.
Why would you?
Because they're going to make the same mistake that I just explained.
Locke doesn't make sense, though. I would go get Daniel Jones. He's the one that looks like Joe Flacco, and that's who you learn from. Like, they have the same skill set.
I mean, you know what happens. Drew Locke's just got a monster arm. I mean, that's the thing. Like, when you side-by-side those two guys, and you just watch the ball come out of their hands.
Oh, yeah.
It ain't even close.
Oh, no. It's like
that's – so I think that's what happens, right, is when you just see each guy throw, you recognize how that ball explodes out of Drew Locke's hands, and you kind of overlook the accuracy issues because you're like, well, he'll figure that out. You know, I'm going to take the raw talent over the refined
prospect.
Did
you see what Mike Leach said?
What did he say?
His number one thing for a quarterback is accuracy. He's like, that is all I care about. Arm strength, all that other stuff doesn't matter. You have to be accurate.
And look at how Baker's flourished. You know, I mean, that's the thing. You know, size, height, whatever, be damned. If you know where to put the ball when, Drew Brees, I mean, that's the key.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. You know, I go the other way on that. I like Cam Newton and Ben Roethlisberger, who aren't the most accurate QBs, but have had plenty of success themselves.
Sure.
Maurice, your guy, question number two of three. I'm trying to get you guys out, but quickly. Eric Bieniemy, you always honor the guys who helped you along the way. He is one of your main guys who you always hold up as a brilliant football mind. How bummed is he? How angry is he that the Sean McVay the clone thing happened across the NFL when Eric Bieniemy had the NFL's best offense in 2018.
We talked about it last night. He's not really upset. I mean, he's a guy like, look, okay, worst case scenario, I'm back here coaching Patrick Mahomes again, the same offense, and then there'll be jobs opening up next year. But he told me, he was like, look, it was a great experience. I thought I did a really good job for a couple teams. But he was like, it wasn't as if like this was it for me or, you know, like I just saw Matt LaFleur, I have to go back and try to rebuild this Titans offense and fix it. It was more of, okay, I have a great pillow to land on, right? I get to coach Patrick Mahomes again, Tyreek Hill, all these guys, maybe get another running back and showcase, you know, my ability to kind of form and fit some things. And then he gets to learn under Andy Reid again, another year of just being a play caller. And I think next year he'll be towards the end of the year, from what I heard, and he confirmed, is like he called more plays towards the end of the year. And so next year he'll be the play caller the whole time.
You talk about offsetting your divisional foes. To me, Bieniemy would have been a great fit. Fangio makes a lot of sense to Denver. But if you bring Bieniemy in there to tune up that offense and make it 21st century and put it along with a nice defense, that would have been scary, and the Chiefs would have hated that. The one who's the looming monster in the whole AFC, it would appear to be Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. You take away Bieniemy, like, here's what he likes to do. I know that people can debate how valuable that is. That would have to at least intrigue John Elway to be able to do that, to mess with the Chiefs a little bit. Last thing, you knew it was coming, money. 84, first-round pick, where's he going? And for how much?
Is he fetching a first-round pick?
No.
Yes.
I don't think so.
I think he is.
No. I don't think so. Because, okay, so who, like, you're not giving a high first for him, right? So now you're talking about teams like...
You're going to send him to New England?
Yeah,
come on.
That's what I mean. Now you're talking to teams at the back end. So,
what's true today,
you know, Patriots,
doesn't have to be true by the time they deal. You can move
maybe
down.
Maybe the Packers, right? Maybe the Packers. They've got the Saints pick that's right there at 29 or 30, whatever it is. Maybe that's the spot if they decide that he's a perfect complement to Michael Thomas. I mean, I don't know, man. That's it. Look, is he talented? Is he the best receiver in the league? I'd say yes, but... Asking teams to give up firsts is tough, man. It is a big ask.
What I'm hearing right now is you're probably going to get 2 through 4 and maybe multiple picks. But Pittsburgh already said it. Like, we're not sending them to a place that we have to see them. That's what we're not going to do. So you're expecting – I'm looking at teams like – that's why I really feel like the Niners are a team that you can – really see
which
that.
I guess that second is like a first, right?
Right.
If your pick, instead of it being 30, is 34, that's not as big of a deal. It might as well. So there you go. I mean, I guess that does make sense. I mean, that seems like you could sell that, right? No, it's not a first-rounder, but what the heck? It's two picks away from being a first-rounder.
There's no one in free agency that is worth the – that's going to fix the Raiders' collection of pass catchers, including Jared Cook, whether he returns or not to Oakland. That, I mean, you can't throw Derek Carr another year like that. You can't throw him to the Wolves again with no one to throw the ball to. It makes all the sense in the world.
I don't think Pittsburgh would send them there.
And
they don't
want
to give him to the Patriots. No. They don't want to give him to the Patriots. They don't want to give him within the AFC North. Sending him out to the AFC West is literally
I don't think the Raiders will pay that money, check. I don't think they'll write that check. I don't think they will. I think they are I don't know their finances, but I don't think you're going to see that team spend money until they get to Vegas.
But they control them with that money. That's the virtue of trading for Antonio Brown. Yeah, it's a big number, but you know what that number is, and it stays at that number basically for the next several years. That's what you want in 84. And by the way, you're the Raiders. You're about to move. You have to sell tickets. You have to, I mean, you can't have another bum season with John Gruden. Then the wheels are off. Who's buying tickets in Oakland? I mean, in Vegas, you
everybody.
Want that.
Everybody.
They've already sold them.
Yeah. That's okay, fair. But I do think that they can make a splash.
I think that's why they traded Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper, because they didn't want to spend the money.
Yeah.
I don't want to say they weren't capable, but I think there's part of that, that they're like, okay, this is, you know, probably the, I mean, I'm trying to euphemize it here. This is the least wealthy team in the league. This is a team that has repeatedly been described as cash strapped, and you're not going to be able to hand Khalil Mack a $120 million deal or Amari Cooper $18 million a year. So they trade him under the guise of, oh, we're getting first round picks back and we're rebuilding. Well, I mean, not to get too deep into it, but the way the NFL works, you have to have that money in escrow.
But don't all
whatever
the Steelers,
your money is,
well,
and I don't know if they have it.
Money and Maurice, two guys who understand pro football finances and cap and all that about as well as anybody I get to talk to. It just seems to me, and then we'll leave it there, but isn't all that guaranteed money, or most of it at least, isn't that the Steelers' responsibility? You're just taking a contract that you know the known amount is there for you. It's not the same standard as here. Khalil Mack is, we're paying you out $40 million guaranteed. It's
that money has to go into
it's slipperier
account.
Than that.
Right, it has to go into an escrow account.
So the biggest issue with Mack's deal was that they just put all of Gruden's money into an account, right? So there's $100 million in an account. Coaches' contracts are guaranteed. So you just put $100 into an account. Now you have to talk about
another
$65 million, $70 million. Like, it's just like, all right, like, it wasn't going to work. And then you already have Derek Carr's money in there. You already have other coaches' money in there. It's just – and for Oakland, again, like, money, you said it best. They're going to make more money in Vegas.
Right.
And so they're like, we might as well wait until we get there to – and I'm not saying they're doing this or not. I'm just telling you what I think they're doing. We might as well wait till Vegas so we can start getting this cash flow in, and then we can do whatever we want.
Right.
And we'll have cap space, and we'll be able to kind of make things happen, and we can go out and then spend big. And so those
I don't know. I don't know about the allure. It always is money, Maurice, as you say. It's not like fans think, I'd like to live in New Orleans or I'd like to live in L.A. It seems to me players don't think that way. It's like, who's paying me the most? Oh, they're going to give me $17 more to go there? All right, I'll go play there.
Shaq, we see it all the time.
Who's
going
to want to go to Vegas, though?
Right.
But if it's if they're just this abject joke of a team without any, if they go another season of just of gross failure,
then if they have $100 million in cap space, they will have anybody they want.
Well, and by the way, what does Nevada also have? By the way,
no state tax,
exactly.
Baby.
Exactly. So now you are making, if instead of going to Oakland where you're going to get hit with a 13.5% state tax, you now get hit with a big zero for 8 of those games. Or 10 of those games, if you include the preseason. I mean, you're talking about a giant windfall of cash.
That was the big thing in Florida.
Right.
That's why.
Florida, Washington, Texas.
Tennessee,
Nevada. There you go.
All right, your concerns, well-founded money. I still say that third,
that's why
the first
AFC
round.
South is such a great place.
Right.
Because the only time I had to pay taxes is when I came to the place I built here. It was unreal.
And by the way, taxes here are pretty favorable.
They're pretty nice.
Not too bad.
Now, money, I want you to get in the car and have Maurice ride shotgun. I want you to take him down to beautiful Bloomington, Indiana.
Hour away.
Take him to Knicks.
There's no reason.
You'll love it, Maurice.
I may go to the Pacers game tonight.
Okay. A little round ball in.
Yeah, I may go check it out. Get booed.
It's a great state. It's a great arena.
It is.
Love the field house. Big fan. The bricks up the side.
I don't know who they're playing. I think they're playing the Knicks or somebody, so I don't know.
Butler playing? Yuck. I wouldn't mind going to Old Hinkle, see if Butler's got a game this week. That could be a good time.
We played there, right, Shaq?
Maurice, that's right.
We out there balling.
Ike and McAfee, we tangled.
Yeah, McAfee had no chance. And then you brought in the old coach.
That's right. Who was it again? Who came out there?
I don't know.
Damon Bailey.
It didn't matter who it was, Shaq. He stepped in the court and got this work.
Well, Maurice, for the record, I had a bad back, as you know, and that was unfair.
Just let her know what kind of game was going to be.
I had a very bad back, and that is not jive. Do I think I could have hung with you? No. But I would have been much better had I not had a bad back. But I've told the story a million times. I'll tell for the million and first. Maurice and I, this is really, this weird anecdote told me a great deal about what pro football players like. You watch them and you get inured to their physicality. Maurice and I, early in the game, reached for a loose ball simultaneously. He had no momentum that I didn't have. We both reached for it, and we bumped hips, and I landed in the 38th row. I don't – like, there's something about
– That was right. The foul I was talking about.
At the point of contact, there's something about your ability to, like, steal your body that makes it so that you don't – so that the other guy gets the worse of the collision, right?
Well,
there's something
the
to that. It was crazy. I'm not a light guy.
Ike was there. We were all there, and I saw the look in Ike's eye. Because at first I just thought we were messing around, but then I looked in his eye, and it was like I'm here.
Burning.
I'm here to compete.
Burning desire.
That was the other thing. That's right. It was,
said,
there were three guys out there that day. I was like, oh, these guys, even in a dumb pickup two-on-two basketball game that involves a potbelly Jew, these guys all got super.
McAfee was tripping.
Right. They got super competitive.
That's what ended up starting it.
He was tripping guys?
No. Like, he literally started, like, trying to play. Like, he was really – because at first it was just, and then McAfee was like – and then Ike just looked at me, and I was like, oh, well, here we go. It's strapping him up. Let's get going. So, I was thinking about going there, but I'm not going to go. I'm just going to grab something to eat here.
Yep.
Yeah. I worked out this morning, Shaq. I'm feeling great.
Me too.
You
did? Where do you want to go?
All right, good for you guys.
Yeah, I'm hungry.
Go to the what's the
good
bar?
There's a really good – I heard about a sandwich place down here that we got to go to.
I think we've had it here before. We had it last year.
Wait a second. Before we go.
Oh, we got to get some Basbo's pizza. Yes, that's for sure.
What is that called?
Basbo?
No,
the pizza's delicious.
I think it's only so-so.
Malnati's?
No. That's a Chicago-based pizza
joint. Oh, it has the best salads. It's the best salads ever in the world.
Why are you going to a pizza joint for a salad?
Because that's what I do.
Come on now.
I had the pizza, but the salads were phenomenal as well.
Wait a second. I can't think of the great bar that's there, Money, that has live music and blues and everything. It's
right under the bridge there.
I can't think of the legendary place where I've been at least 8-10 times in my life. Why can't I think of the name of that dumb place?
It's escaping
me,
too.
It's a great joint.
What's the weather like in L.A., Shaq? Because it's freezing here.
It's rainy here. The sky's crying without you. There's some great places. I hear there's a Primanti's there now.
Oh,
but
really?
Don't trust that that's going to be as good as the original one.
Right.
In Pittsburgh. But yeah.
Yeah, I was just there. I had my Primanti's.
Basbo's. I've had Basbo's. Meh. So
it's good. Basbo's good.
He said meh.
I did have some Three Floyds beer last night, by the way. They had Gumball Head, which I was very excited about.
So if you ever want to go, this is all the people here, if you ever want to meet coaches, go to Kilroy's at like 10:30. And every coach in the NFL will be sitting there.
Playing some shuffleboard.
Yeah.
Kilroy's was another of my bars in Bloomington. It started down in Bloomington, Indiana.
Is it the Chatterbox? Is that what? I don't think it's the Chatterbox.
No,
it's a blues club. It's not a jazz club, Brady. It's a blues joint. It's right under that damn bridge, and I can't remember the name of it.
I'm embarrassed because I've been there to see many
Melody
bands.
Melody Inn? No. Is it the Melody Inn? No.
We're trying to get the people what they want.
Yeah.
I'll tweet it out. Meantime, one last thing I just wanted to say and then cut the mics as soon as I say it so that there's no response. I mean, who in 2018 was responsible for the Steelers' demise more than Le'Veon Bell, the guy who didn't play, Maurice? How dare you have that conversation about
you're mad at Le'Veon Bell, you're gonna let your triplets out the door.
I am not mad.
It's not my fault. Be mad at the organization.
I'm not mad. I'm just saying, if you wish to cast aspersions on anyone, if you're pointing the finger at like, hey, why didn't the Steelers make the playoffs? It's because of the guy who didn't play for 16
games. That's what I told people that.
That's all.
I said
okay.
I said Le'Veon Bell counts for 5 wins. He didn't play. You guys won. You won 8. Now let's see how many Antonio Brown counts for.
That's the practical thing. It's not me hating Le'Veon Bell. I'm just saying saying when you challenge me and you and Bucky come at me about like how you're blaming Le'Veon
Bell.
He didn't play a game. Of course,
you're mad at Le'Veon Bell.
I'm not mad at him in the least.
I was just saying that he's worth 5 games.
Okay,
people on Twitter got mad at me because I said that on TV.
I'm pretending like my mic was cut.
Yeah, I tried one too, but it's craziness.
It's
been amazing. I miss
what
you.
A great
I can't
time.
Wait to hug you.
I wish to hug you both, but instead I'll just ask you to hug each other. I want you to show Los Angeles, nay, the world, that Rams and Chargers broadcasters can
come together.
We're going to be in the same building in like 2 minutes.
All right. That's nice. That's
literally
nice.
In a year, right? After next year?
And we're going to be calling games next weekend.
Yeah.
We're calling Antonio Commanders Arizona Hotshots game together.
You know what? That's going to be a great game.
It is.
But you know the best team right now?
I love both coaches.
Yes.
Pac-12, Mike Riley versus Rick
Neuheisel. The best team right now is the San Diego Fleet.
They have the you know what else they have, Maurice? They have the best uniforms.
Yeah.
They have the best
uniforms. The best bomber jacket. Did you see Mike Martin's bomber jacket?
It's beautiful.
It's nice.
The starter, I got to get that.
Yeah, I know. I like the Stallion starter jacket the best. That silver with the blue horse on the back.
I take it back.
I like the silver with the yellow fleet.
Yeah.
The yellow outline.
Although I think the Hot Shots might be the best.
Stallions have the best uniforms.
Yeah.
Stallions.
They're all pretty good.
The light blue. It's something about that gray and yellow that gets me going.
It's
and
nice.
And then they have a running back that's number 32 that's short. That's 5707.
Two shades of gray? Some say boring. I say bold. I love what the
iron,
the fleet are
the
doing.
Birmingham iron with the black and white.
It's a good look.
I like that as
it's
well.
Good look. And you know what? Purple brings out the color in my eyes. So
it does.
I like the Atlanta Legends as well.
The one team I just don't understand their colors is the Orlando Apollos team.
The orange and blue.
He's just like,
yeah.
But I love the old ball coach back at it again.
It's kind of cool. Get that hip I kind of like though. The that splash of orange. It's
not
a little Miami Sharks for me with the Birmingham eye.
Good pull. Good pull.
But otherwise, yeah, I mean, listen, the one thing that's for sure is the uniforms look swell. Also, beyond a shadow of a doubt, two of the best in the business, Maurice Jones-Drew. Make sure you're paying attention to him all week long there on NFL Network, flapping his gums about all things combined related. And then Matt Money Smith, of course, one half of the greatest radio show in all the land. Petros and Money, track it down on iHeartRadio. Thanks so much, fellas. We'll see you back in Los Angeles. Have a grand time out there. Go eat more Permane. Panties. Ooh, go get some of those Steak and Shake fries, them shoestring fries.
And you dip them in the milkshake.
I almost went there last night, but I'm working
so
on
good.
My figure, as you can see, look, Chuck.
You look
from
terrific.
From this side, I look really good.
Hey, if you see him in the Shula's
side,
bar, because
so
he's
much.
Usually in there. He's usually
Shula's is not there anymore.
That's gone.
It's gone.
No way.
Yeah. It's now some joint called Nourish.
I don't know what
Nourish
that
this.
That's where I used to. That's where I used to like the kibitz with one Ryan Clark. Wish him the best in getting the Monday night football.
Good luck
football
in the
game.
MNF job. Dude.
Yeah, he's going to have it because of you.
All right, thanks so much, fellas. Appreciate the time, and that's it for us here in Studio 66. We'll kibitz with you later on in the week. Until then, I think we have some good MVP behind the glass. What do we have lined up later in the week? I forget what. Do we have something? Oh wait, no, we're done. We'll be. I'm sorry. We'll be back on Tuesday for you. I believe we'll be visited by one Adam Carolla. So be on the lookout for that. Until then, it's been a thin slice of heaven.